Welcome to Trending. This is Timory Millington, and that is Chris Mueller. We are live on Facebook and YouTube, and we are on the air.
We are on the air.
Yeah, just in case. Sure you don't say anything you didn't have planned. Today, some of you may be hearing this airing on Easter. Happy Easter.
Hallelujah, he is risen indeed.
If it is Good Friday, which is when this is available on the podcast, a solemn day of fasting for you.
That is so weird to be doing Good Friday and Easter in the same podcast. We live in the mystery of the death and the resurrection of our Lord.
The already, not yet. I'm feeling it right now.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, you know, we're just talking about how great the topics are that we've chosen to talk about, given that it's Easter for some of you that already not yet, still taking place, like heaven on earth, you know, this balance. But we're talking about exorcists and the Satanists today.
Yeah, it's a real thing. This is one of those things in the church we don't talk about a lot, particularly in the Church of America. But it's happening. There is a reality that there is a devil and he hates you, and he's not God's equal, but he hates God, hates him with a burning hate, can't do anything to God. But you're made in the image and likeness of God. So while he can't hurt God, he can definitely take some shots at you, and he will, and right. Does.
Well, and this is what we're going to be talking about quite a bit today on the show. But before we get to that, you know, there have been all these marches talking about gun violence. There have been these major shootings, Parkland shooting, resurrecting the conversations about past shootings that have taken place. And, like, you just look at what's happening, Chris. And it's just this crying out that we're seeing that at the heart of everything, before the gun debate, before all of these conversations, is this desire for a strong morality rooted in God. And when you don't have that, that's when we end up debating all of these topics.
Yeah. You know, I look at this, the great country we live in here in the United States, and I would not have wanted to be born anywhere else. I love my nation. However, you look at our founding documents, you look at the Declaration of Independence or our Constitution, and, you know, we're a republic. We're founded on principles. We have founding principles. It's not a true democracy. It isn't whatever the crowd thinks at the time. There are some founding principles. Those principles make sense in the context of a Judeo-Christian morality. Right. If every life is precious, those principles make sense. When you take away that underlying Judeo-Christian morality, what you end up with is a mess. And I think that's where we're at. We don't live in a culture where every life is considered sacred anymore. And so we're seeing things like mass shootings. That's right. Inconceivable. I don't think the founders could ever have conceived of a situation like Parkland. Like, I just don't think they could have conceived of it.
Well, you know, if you think about it, they were fighting for basic rights, the founding fathers were. You know, they were fighting a war just to live within a religious freedom type of zone. And so now you see what's happening, you know, our surrendering of religious liberty, our, you know, placating basically those we disagree with, this quote unquote tolerance where we're all silent. I think they'd be aghast at what we're doing.
I think absolutely. I mean, you look at how freedom of speech was put in so that you had the right of political speech, that you could speak out against a tyrannical government. And now it's been used to justify the selling of human beings on the internet and calling it entertainment. Right. You know, we have a real situation here. And so I think we're at a point now where we have to ask, we either have to start teaching morality again, or we have to ask, can we handle the freedoms our Constitution guarantees us?
Right. You know, it's funny, it's kind of like tying this in. I was at a party the other day and a bunch of the kids were outside and someone's hollering at the kids to get inside because we're going to sing happy birthday to the birthday boy, right? And she's hollering at the kids to get inside. She's like, get inside now, you know, telling them to come in. And I was like, tell them why. Right? Because if you're just yelling at someone to come inside and you're like, we know, you know, yeah, come on, get inside. We're waiting on you guys. But if they don't know the reason why, they're not really going to care. They might not listen to you, you know? And I look at what's happening right now with all of the issues we're having. If we don't have first a rule, but also that love and explanation and that long-term plan for that rule, like marriage and our sexuality and the beauty of sexuality and having a healthy marriage and with longevity, you know, that's what the goal is, not just suppressing in the moment of your sexual urges.
Right. Rules don't work unless they have reasons, right? And so often that even doesn't work unless you have a community holding up those reasons and those rules. Mm-hmm. And so I think we right now we have this complete anonymity, right? Everybody's alone by themselves. You know, you think about this. Like, if you go back to, like, the 1950s, you couldn't just put your headphones in and ignore the people around you. Right? You just couldn't, right? And I'm not idealizing the 1950s. I'm just saying we've progressively isolated human beings to the point now that it is absolutely normal for a child to sit in the car with his parents with his headphones in, listening to his own music. And you can buy a car that's got a system specifically for that, right?
Yeah,
so we're raising us up in isolation. Then you've taken away the practice of faith from, you know, the majority of Americans now are not active in their faith like we once were. We're not teaching a morality based in the sanctity of life. And so why does it matter? Well, it's the right thing. Why is it the right thing? Well, there is no truth anymore, right? And so how do you have a system based on principles when there is no truth? How do you have a system based on principles when there is no sanctity of human life?
Well, when we're not even seeing the lives right before us, you know, and I was looking at this piece and on the National Catholic Register and this man, and this is so true of all of us. Do we know the name of our neighbors? No. Do we maybe talk to someone interacting in the, you know, hall of our apartment or maybe at church, and we go years never knowing their name or what they do or, you know, if they have children, grandchildren? Like, we are a part of the problem. And, you know, not to just sound pessimistic, but like, man, are we like so distant from just basic common courtesy of like, hey, I'm so-and-so, I've seen you for a while. Instead, we're embarrassed. Like, I haven't known your name for the last year, so I'm just not going to ask it and continue to be part of the problem.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've got a good friend who works down in Houston. And he's got a ministry called The Door down there. And really, primarily what they do is they just gather neighborhoods. They you know, he opens his backyard and they have a family dinner with the entire neighborhood once a week. And they're preaching the gospel in a way they're just living out the love of your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been powerful how God's worked in and through that. And they go plant themselves in kind of the worst neighborhoods you can find. But I'm in like one of the nicest neighborhoods you could find. I mean, you know, it's not that nice, but if you consider the third world, it's amazing. But again, yeah, do I know my neighbors? Most of the time, we just don't want to inconvenience ourselves with their mess, right?
Right.
Because we know our own mess, and if they're half as messed up as I am, I can't handle that mess, right?
Right.
And the thing is, we need each other, or our mess just gets worse.
Well, and I look at it as the importance of giving that responsibility back to other people, of give them the responsibility of knowing you and knowing about your life and caring. And I think that because we don't want the responsibility of others, we never give people the opportunity to rise to the occasion of that life-giving, self-giving love that we're called to.
Yeah. You know, my sister and her husband were so good at this, at just loving the kids in their neighborhood. Like, she would just set up in a lawn chair on her cul-de-sac and the kids would come in. And what's been fascinating about it is how the faith was brought into the lives of young people. And they weren't preaching, they weren't proselytizing, they're just loving people. But, you know, one of the strongest people of faith I know, her name's Lisa, she came to know the Lord because that family loved her, and she saw the love of the Lord in that family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's two young men I know who are raising families that they were involved in the church, their families are Catholic, but it was that they were a little bit nominal in their own faith. Because they saw the love of the Lord in that family, they fell in love with the Lord through that. You know, and so it was inviting people in and taking responsibility for kids that were not their own, in a sense, like, you know, running the confirmation class. It was taking responsibility for kids that were not your own, so you could share the love of God.
Carpools.
Right? Carpools,
yeah,
right?
Think about carpools.
Basically, and again, my brother-in-law is a very successful business person. He doesn't have a lot of time,
mm-hmm.
but he said, this is important time. Important time is me to go out in the cul-de-sac and throw the football with the kids.
Yeah.
Important time is me to go on conferences with the students when they're in high school so I can be present in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it made a tremendous difference. If we as Catholics would recommit to sharing the why of the morality, not the rules of the morality, and getting messy with each other's lives, and not just with each other in the church, but with our neighborhoods, yeah, it would be a tremendous difference in our culture.
Well, and you just talked about not even the why of morality, but also the example of the morality, because the why is explained in the example of people who are willing to go and throw that football in the midst of that cul-de-sac, hanging out with the kids. Because you know what? We've been talking about fatherless homes. You might be the only example of a true father who's present in the home to other children. And they may recognize when they're a parent one day, that's what I want to be like.
No, absolutely. I mean, okay, even more than that, you may be the only example of a Christian or the church that someone encounters. In our more and more secular world, is someone going to look at your family and go, man, I really want to be a Christian because I see how they love each other. You know, and when they think Catholic Church, do they think your family?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, most of the, and hey, that's a challenge for me. I've got, you know, we have a circus going on half the time and it's a wonderful circus, but are we sharing the joy of that in a way that people look at us and go, oh, a bunch of Catholics, or they go, man, Catholics.
Right.
Yeah, it's a big difference.
Right. You know, I was looking, we're going to talk about this more in a second, but I was looking at some of the stories about former Satanists. And one of the women who was a former Satanist talks about, basically, she struggled, she's had autism since she was a kid. She went to Catholic school, fell away from the church, got into Satanism. But when she's talking about how people didn't like her, and partially she mentioned, like, making, like, not so pleasant faces at people, or if people treated her badly, then she'd treat them back. And it's a reminder for us Catholics, like, having patience with people, not making those ugly faces, you know, especially for people who just, like, wear their emotions on their sleeves. And you might be the best people, but maybe you rolled your eyes when you shouldn't have. You know, like, man, people really do react, and they are impacted by those basic interactions that shut the door on really the evangelization of the gospel by who you are.
Yeah, I want to point out that you segued from my family to Satanism, which I felt was a little bit... Anyway.
the life of radio.
You know, that's a reminder, though, of how spiritual warfare happens so often. You know, somebody said, well, they'd make a face at me and I make one back. And what we forget is that whisper of deceit that comes in. You know, there's a devil who hates you, and his goal is to take you away from the Lord. And so you see someone you perceive to be a Christian, and you, they don't smile. And so what happens is the devil whispers. Like, angels can only give inspiration. That's all they can do. And the devil is an angel, just a fallen one. Yeah. And he whispers, they don't like you. Or they hate you because of your sexuality. Or they're looking at you and they think this about you. And they're judging you. And then all we need to do to start heading down that path is agree with him. And take his version of the story of creation versus God's story.
Right. Show them otherwise. Show them otherwise. Especially when people are living those contrary lifestyles and you feel uncomfortable. Yeah, you can feel uncomfortable, but you can also show that I see you as a person before me. And I can live my faith in that moment by not really reducing them to their sexual desire or whatever the context is. This is Tim Ray Millington. That is Chris Mueller. You are listening to Trending. We hope you're enjoying the show, and we'll be right back talking more about Satanists and exorcists. Welcome to Trending. That is Chris Mueller, my new co-host, if you heard the announcement last week. And this is Tim Ray Millington. Happy Good Friday, or Solemn Good Friday. Happy Easter. We're kind of giggling that this show is, you know, kind of being broadcasted on one or the other right now.
Yeah, it's a very weird place to be. We are both doing a Good Friday podcast and an Easter broadcast.
Yes, we have not risen,
But we're an Easter people.
We are the Easter people.
We are the Easter people.
Yes, we are the Easter people. Praise so God. Arise. So one interesting thing we were hearing, that exorcists, I guess, are in high demand right now. This is something that we've been seeing just sweeping, not just the nation here, but around the world. Also very much so in Rome. We heard that 500,000 annual claims of demonic possession are reported. And Italy, man, they have a lot of responding to do. Luckily, they're the hub of priests out there, so there's a little bit more preparation for this. But what's happening is fewer people are interested in being exorcists. A lot of these cases are actually psychological issues. So maybe the priest isn't prepared to handle this, and needs to, divert to someone else. But the issue across the board is when you have things like the Charlie Challenge, which was a pencil challenge, remember, on the paper, when you have continued adoption of Ouija boards, people having fun just screwing around in seances, this is the realm of demonic obsession and possession that we are opening ourselves up to.
Yeah, you know, in a sense, I feel like we're victims of the Enlightenment, right? Mm. Where we want to explain everything away with scientific, can be tested in a laboratory type reason. The reality is we live in a supernatural world, right? There's God. He's out there, but they're angels. They're out there, and you have a guardian angel who is there to stand with you and fight on your behalf and to inspire you with the goodness of the Lord and to try to lead you back when you start to stray. But they're demons. You know, that is a truth of our faith, that there is a devil, and the devil hates the Lord. The devil hates you. Yeah. Devil can't hurt Jesus, but he can hurt you.
Yeah. In that reminder you mentioned at the beginning of the show, that demons are fallen angels. They can manipulate matter, to make it look like appearance of an actual person or a thing. They can, you know, basically interact with you in a way that feeding ideas toward you that make you think and lean toward behavior that we shouldn't, or that self-doubt, that self-criticism. all of these elements, you know, we've got to talk about this. And, you know, imagine that already taking place. But then when you're seeking it out, when you're overly curious about the demonic realm, overly curious about the dead, I was thinking about this, Chris, we've been talking about how there's this obsession with being inhuman, not being human. And I think that that's part of this search of the tarot cards and the Ouija boards, that it seems superhuman to people.
Well, there's something about the human condition that we know that there must be more than what we see. We know that, right? We and again, as a human, you are not a spirit with a body. You're not a body with a spirit. You're a spirit and a body. That's who you are. We are more than matter. And inherently, we know that. Now, if you've been raised in faith, then you know what that means, how you relate to the, you know, the reality in God's creation. You know that. If you haven't been, or if you've already decided that there is no truth in the faith, which is kind of what the new wave atheism tells you, that there's no truth in Christianity, or any traditional religion for that matter, then what we find is you still have this hunger for something transcendent, something bigger. You have this knowledge inherently that there's a spiritual reality. And so you go off looking for it in the worst possible places. You find yourself wandering into tarot cards and into witchcraft, into spells and into all of those things because you're discovering something. You know, you end up feeling like you've discovered these secrets and there is some truth in it. But it's not the truth. And, you know, you can take the truth and you can make it terrible if you only get a little tiny piece of it.
Well, I'm sitting here thinking about that Good Friday moment where Jesus is before Pontius Pilate. And there's that question of what is truth?
Yeah.
What is truth? Here, that question was present in the midst of the passion of Christ. And here we are called to pick up our crosses and follow him and not just jump right into the resurrection. We are the Easter people. We have the opportunity to rise with him, to be with him, but we can't skip the cross part of it. And part of that is what is truth. That is the journey that we are on. And we're entering into that pursuit. We're entering into that evangelization effort that lives in the light of truth.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is going to open up a whole nother can here, but I wonder if we're not seeing a rise in some of these things because we've disarmed all of the traditional archetypes. We've disarmed all the traditional, negatives. And just to kind of give you a sense, you know, the dragon was always a symbol of evil, right? But in popular culture, you look at, you know, dragon tales now. It's like, well, dragons are sweet and fun, right? Yay. And so I didn't let my kids watch it. So I was like, no, we want to have the dragon. Like, I only know one dragon that exists. It's the devil. We can fight it. You know, you look at, you know, the Harry Potter series, which are really wonderfully written children's books. But you're now
the debate.
Well, and I don't want to get into the debate too much, but again, have you desensitized people to things that they should be consider abhorrent, right? And then you look at the way that those are marketed so often, you know, if you go into, at the height, when you'd go into the bookstore and you'd look at, there's a Harry Potter collection right there, they would often have tarot cards on the same table or Ouija boards on the same table or, you know, junior spell book on the same table. And what you're saying is, this is all just fun and games and silly. And, and if witchcraft and wizardry is just fun and games and silly and tarot cards and reading tea leaves and all that is just fun and silly, then you've completely disarmed someone to the fact that, no, that this is a gateway to much bigger bad things.
Well, and you know, there's that balance of, you can always take something too far. You know, it's like the fortune cookie. Do you really believe that is your fortune, right? Do you believe in reading the tea leaves? Do you believe all those elements? It's not something that we should mess with, right?
Right.
And you know, we're not entering into that conversation of the Harry Potter, but what happens is we've got to be responsible at being able to identify truth so that when we do hear, see, and read those stories, we're able to see, this is a fairy tale world and we are looking for good triumphing over evil. And when that's not taking place, we need to be able to call it for what it is.
Well, you also need to look at age appropriate too.
Right.
You know, have you taught your children about the reality of the spiritual world we live in? Or are you just sending them into this through fairy tale that's not fairy tale? I mean, if you look at traditional fairy tale, like you said, it always teaches something. You always have the hero's quest. You always see good. There's morality being taught in it. If you're sending them into fairy tale, but it's not teaching them morality, it's still teaching morality. Mm. You know, there's still these bigger things that are happening.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned the dragon topic because I love reading fantasy books, right? Fantasy, different worlds, kingdoms, princesses, dragon slayers, you name it. But the series I'm reading right now, the dragons are the good guys and the dragon riders are the good guys and they're doing good things to protect their nation. And it's so interesting.
Is this
interesting.
The one that takes place in like Napoleonic France?
No, Dragon Riders of Pern.
I read one about that.
The whole series. Well, and it's so, okay, clearly a fellow fantasy nerd.
We're so dorks. Yeah.
I go into the aisle and I'm like, I'm not with you people. That's why Amazon's great, because no one has to see you there.
Yeah, totally. Again, that's that isolation we were talking about, the unhealthy isolation of our modern age.
It's like, I do not say hello to the people in the fantasy aisle because you do not know where that conversation is.
You don't want to get their mess on you. Does that make sense? Their lives are messy and weird and you want a part of that because they're clearly more of a weirdo than you are. This is the judgmental position we find ourselves in.
It's like, should I say hello?
Yeah.
Should I say hello?
I will not be attending any cons with you.
But, you know, I'm looking at this story and reading about, you know, the dragons, and I hadn't actually thought, like, there's this discomfort right now in the story for me, and I haven't been able to pinpoint it. I think part of it might be that dragon side, but I've come to recognize them as just another creature that people love. They're good creatures, but they keep putting this pro-abortion element, this basically eugenics that, hey, they talk about how this one dragon didn't crack, and then someone came in and forced the dragon egg to crack, and now it's this ugly dragon, and everyone assumes it's not going to live, and some are saying, well, someone probably shouldn't have helped that dragon egg crack because it would have been better not to have this deformed, questionable dragon walking around, just like we wouldn't want that to happen with children.
Right.
And you see it, and like, man, right then and there, eugenics is pushed right away, and it sounds quote-unquote compassionate, what they think sounds compassionate, but it's eugenics.
Right. No, and it's, again, if life has no inherent dignity, has no inherent value, then yeah, you just leave it. You're back to the ancient Romans. You're leaving something. You just, oh, the child isn't perfect. We'll leave it out to be exposed.
Right.
You're back to that, you know, pre-Christian world.
I see your computer screen right now, and right away I see nerdy graphics of different comics, fantasy realm movies. And, you know, I love talking about books, Chris, because I think that one of the gifts of reading, if you have been taught critical thinking skills, is that you can read and go, you know what, this isn't okay. I need to put it away. I shouldn't be reading this.
Right.
Or this is really good and I can point out this is the fault in this character and where this character goes wrong because the creator, the writer's trying to create this development of character that we should be challenging. We should be learning from. We should look at heroes.
Yeah. It's funny. I was in a deep dive into geeky stuff here, but there was a book I bought for my son years ago called The Dragon Slayers Guide. And it's basically teaching kids about spiritual warfare. Right. And so it trains them up to be a dragon slayer, and it talks about the different things like lust or greediness or all those type of things that you can fight, and goes, but there's one dragon you can't fight. You don't fight by yourself. And it talks about the great evil dragon, and none of these you beat yourself. And, you know, it was really good. And so he read it, and it was a great introduction to the reality of things seen and unseen. Right.
I love that. So Dragon Slayer is the essential training guide for young dragon fighters. Read that. I just realized we'll be right back. This is Trending. That is Chris Mueller. Welcome back to Trending. This is Timory Millington, and that is Chris Mueller. Loves to read books. I am very proud.
I'm a nerdy type guy. No, I do. You know, it's funny. My daughter, our second child, she will just sneak away and read a whole book series in the weekend. I love her heart. Oh man.
And yeah. You know, secretly you wish you could do that again.
Oh, I absolutely do. No, I gave her access to my Kindle. You know, so I put the app on their iPad and I said, you can read, these are the books you can read, you know, so she's just been sucking through them. She's great.
I get it's more affordable, but I'm totally anti-digital reading. I love the smell of books and holding it.
See, there are two types of books for me. There are the types of books where I'm just going to, you know, burn through them. Those are Kindle books. Then they're the type of books where I want to revisit them and highlight and underline and learn. And those are my bookshelf books. So yes. Different things.
I agree. I'm going to throw this out there. I've not read it yet, but Taylor Marshall is a fantastic scholar. Dr. Taylor Marshall has great content, podcasts. He has something like the Augustine Institute for Education, different from the Augustine Institute. Oh, the Thomistic Institute, I think is what it's called. But he wrote a actual fantasy series about St. George and St. George slaying the dragons and the myth of the dragon slayer. I am so looking forward to reading it. So yeah. If anyone reads it before me, don't be a spoil sport here, but please do share some thoughts on how it is and add it to my Amazon queue. That's going to be a new one to read for sure. But one of the things that I am seeing in this conversation, 500,000 claims of demonic possession. You know, we see that all these different demonic possessions, they're saying there was a lot in Los Angeles as well, and that there have been periods of time where you see so many in Los Angeles. And I just look at this and I go, what's the problem? Priests don't want to be exorcists anymore. And I think part of the whole issue is we don't believe in the devil and we don't believe in hell. We just focus on the resurrection or nothing at all.
Right. You know, if there's no devil, if there's no hell, if there's no evil, then there shouldn't have been a cross. Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. But if all of those things are, then the cross was necessary and is necessary. You know, and it is. Again, I don't know how you can't believe in the devil. I mean, I don't get it. Because
it starts with thinking Jesus is nice.
Well, there's that. I mean, you know, that again, it's funny. I've been reading the Holy Week readings, and I had to write an article for You Catholic this week on it. And, gosh, when you see the struggle of Holy Week for Jesus, the struggle of the passion, you know, and it says multiple times, like he was troubled. Right. Like he, you know, when his friends betrayed him, when Judas betrayed him, he was troubled. When he knew, knowing that, like it hurt him.
Right.
Right. But again, when you begin to develop a sensitivity to the way that you come under attack, and there's a great book, called, oh my gosh, I just blanked. Anyway, I'll get to it. But when you begin to get, sensitive to that, it just becomes so apparent, like the ways that you've been under attack, the little whispers, the little lies, the little deceit that happens throughout your day. And it's amazing, you know, and it becomes undeniable that there's more going on. You know, and I'm blanking on this book and I have to look it up anyway.
Well, in that more going on, if priests are not wanting to be exorcists, I get the fear of it, but are we maybe needing to work on the education for priests and helping them to understand, you know, Jesus isn't just a nice guy at the end of your life. You get to go, oh, so you do exist. And then he lets you into heaven. No, at the moment of your death, the responsibility for how you've lived your life, the things you've done, the good, the bad, the reconciliation you've made, you are responsible for that. Not that moment, boom, after your death, where you're like, hey, Jesus, oh, you do exist. I want to go there too.
You know, I think part of why our priests struggle with it. I think part of why we struggle with this reality of good and evil, that there is a devil, that there are demons, a hell, is we are afraid of looking silly. Because we've been under such an attack by secularists, and this isn't new. This is from the Enlightenment on, that we don't want to look silly. So we don't talk about miracles. We don't talk about possessions.
Right.
We don't talk about spiritual warfare. And because even amongst people of faith, we go, I don't know about that.
Yeah. You know? Well, and you think about it. I have a friend who just will talk about most things, but man, you start talking about like anything demonic, anything like too deep alien-ish, and he's like shutting the conversation down. Like this big guy, and it's not that he's just afraid. It's he's like, we're messing in waters we shouldn't be messing in. And, you know, he's wanting to pull away, and people would always mock him. I'm like, no, if he feels uncomfortable, he doesn't want to talk about demons, shut the conversation down and have respect.
Yeah. And it's funny, as a youth minister, anytime we've ever talked about angels and demons, and Peter Kraft has a great book on angels and demons, highly recommend that one. But what happens is kids start leaning in.
Yes.
And they get very fascinated. And so you have to be careful, because too much curiosity can be a bad thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you become fascinated with the darkness, right?
Yeah.
But to pretend that there is no darkness is ridiculous as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that we constantly have to remember is that you are no ordinary thing. You are a child of the living God. At your baptism, you're anointed priest, prophet, and king to reign in this life with Christ. And so that, you know, the little whispers of deceit, the little spiritual attacks, you're not helpless. You know, you have authority in Christ to say, in Jesus' name, be silenced. Over your own life. Now, I'm not talking about exorcism in somebody else. I'm just saying in your own life, your own prayer life, you go to pray and you start coming under attack. And you have, in your own life, you have the authority to tell any unclean spirit to leave you alone, has no authority over you.
And I love that you just mentioned that, because I'll never forget when a priest was like, you know, you when you have those moments where you're just doubting yourself or you're super angry, he said, say this in the name of Jesus. What anger is trying to consume me, be gone. In the name of Jesus, whatever is trying to attack me, be gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't have to be possessed by a demon, but to need that prayer of exorcism, just the name of Jesus and repeating his name. And the Our Father is the best prayer of exorcism we as a laity can pray. Having the crucifix, you know, having those blessed holy objects, it makes a difference.
Yeah. So there was a book I was going to recommend earlier, and I blanked on the name. It was actually called Unbound. It's a practical guide to deliverance. And again, this is just one. If you want to just kind of understand or kind of get a better sense of how spiritual warfare plays out in the ordinary life of a Catholic, great book. Highly recommend.
Fantastic. And it's important that you're reading the right books, because this curiosity, both about angelology and demonology, you have to be really careful, because this obsession about it can be dangerous. And you don't want to open doors that are opening you to, just like there's a kingdom of saints, there's a kingdom of evil, there's a kingdom of demons. And we need to be very careful and not doubt the power of that kingdom.
Right. But with that said, the victory's already been won.
Yeah.
You know, as a believer in Jesus Christ, as a Catholic, as a baptized member of this family, we need to live in the reality of that victory. And you know, we're not in defeat. We're not, this isn't overcome. Well, it's already been overcome. So even when circumstances feel out of our control, even when circumstances feel like I'll never get past this sin that I'm in right now, mm-hmm. we need to then say, no, but I will stand in Christ's victory and allow that grace to work in me.
Yes. Yeah. You know, there's a comment on Facebook that I just saw, and it's talking about demons and how people basically, in some ways, and he's right, go to two extremes. Jim says that they think demons don't exist, or they fixate on them. In reality, we need to know that they exist and focus on God. That is our goal. Focus on the deliverance and protection of God. Man, like, I read the Psalms and they are the battle cries of the people of God, seeking for God to protect them, recognizing the punishment when they turn from him. And as a result of them turning from him, that's when bad things happen, because they need to learn to turn back to him again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Scott Hahn said that one time in a talk. I remember listening to it in my 20s, you know, that there's a grace when everything falls apart, because then you realize your dependence on God,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's how God allows us to have what we wanted, you know?
Right. I keep thinking about this idea, Chris, of solitude and idle time, because there's this story that came out about 3X Satanists and basically their conversion. And as I'm reading one of them, Zachary King, former Satanist, convert back to Catholicism, and he's talking about how fun it was made when he was interacting with all the Satanists. And he's like, man, we played pinball, we played video games, we had a barbecue pit, we had sleepovers, parties, fishing. And he's like, that was basically them evangelizing. And when he says this, I think the need to have something to do, but also the need to be able to stop and meditate and know that you exist and that you're a child of God. Like, that balance for children is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think he was lured in by community, you know, and we hear, you know, when people leave the church, they join other churches. They often point towards community. Right? I felt like I belonged. I felt like I was wanted. Well, that's an intrinsic human need. And Satanists can manipulate that.
Right.
You know? But to stand back and go, yeah, but they're worshiping the devil. We need also the ability to stop and in silence say, but what is the fruit of this? What is what is actually going on? You know, so if you find yourself in a cult, then you go, oh, you know, they're nice people, but they're going to have me make jam for the rest of my life. Maybe I should run from this. You know what I mean?
Right. You know, another one of the former Satanists, Deborah Lipsky, she actually talks about how when she first was introduced, and all of them, by the way, were introduced in high school, essentially, but when she was first introduced to the Black Mass, she was turned off by the vulgarity of it. And I think that when things repulse us, when we're upset, disturbed by them, that needs to be kind of a little bit of, this is my conscience kicking in. There's something wrong here. So it's something that I need to fight, maybe, something I need to not be involved with. You know, we got to think about it. This critical thinking, teaching people to critical think is so important.
Absolutely. And trust, trust your instincts, too.
Right.
You know, you are sensitive to these things. I mean, there's a store in the mall, and I don't even know if they're in the mall anymore, but I would walk into that store, and they had all pop culture stuff, but they had a lot of, like, you'd see, like, pentagrams and that kind of thing. And I would immediately be, like, just uncomfortable. And so I just stopped. I just wouldn't go in there, you know. And to this day, I will not go into that store if I run into it because they, well, it's just a store. But no, there's something unclean in there, and I want no part of it, you know. And I'm allowing myself the sensitivity to say, no, you're not being silly. Like, okay, if I'm being silly, or if I'm not being silly, I'm not going there because I don't want to take the chance.
Yeah, and I think that the costs of stores like that, it's more difficult for them to operate in the malls than when they used to. But I feel like you're seeing a lot of those types of things at farmers markets sometimes now.
Yeah.
And when you're like, ooh, just kind of avoid the lady that kind of, sorry to say it, but looks like a witch, you know, like avoid that area. When there's that repulsion, you know, praying, even just when we're there in that presence or when we're afraid, in the name of Jesus, be gone, I'm protected. In the name of Jesus, I'm saved by your blood.
Yeah, we'd be foolish to not see that this is on the rise, and we need to be aware of it, and we need to be protecting our families by just talking about.
Yeah, they have been talking about the existence of Satan. It's so important. That's Chris Mueller. This is Timory Millington. You are listening to Trending. You can also listen on Facebook Live and YouTube if you want to see what these crazy hosts look like or see some of the links to the show. I always post what we're talking about on Twitter. We will be right back on Trending. This is Trending. That's Chris Mueller. This is Timory Millington. You can always listen to our shows online and actually see us on YouTube and Facebook Live. The archive is available. And we share the links to the shows and all the topics that we are discussing so you guys can dive a little deeper or want some of the facts or information behind what we are talking about. I wanted to put a shout out to our awesome sponsors that have been working with us last couple of months of Radiant and Valiant Magazine. They're published, published by our Sunday Visitor. And Radiant Magazine, I actually have a piece in the latest version of Radiant Magazine, and it's focused on faith and a little bit about more my story with dancing. And we are doing a giveaway for that magazine. So if you are interested in winning that magazine, you have to go ahead and post your favorite episode of Trending. Hopefully it's one with Chris.
Yeah, and there are less of those. But they've been amazing. They've all been very good.
They have been fun.
There you go.
They have been very fun.
Oh, wow. I like that. I said very good. You said, well, they've been fun. That's nice. Thank you. All right, that's good.
I'm not joking. Oh, okay. Well, you can share the link to that episode tagging Chris, who is very good.
No, there you go. Thank you.
You're using the words of God at creation. Very
yes.
good. You can tag myself and then also Radiant Magazine. And when you do that, you qualify yourself for the giveaway. And we'll be closing the giveaway as of Sunday, Divine Mercy Sunday. So you have about a week and a half here. So be sure to hop on and tag your favorite show, because we also just love to know what you're enjoying listening to as well. So on that note, we're going to talk about The Office in a second here. And it's not about whether you're addicted to going to The Office, but the show The Office, which I actually haven't seen.
You have not seen The Office?
I have not seen The Office.
Wow.
And so I still don't understand the obsession with The Office, which seems hilarious according to most people.
Yeah, no, it's good. It was a great moment of television history. But the story is, I guess there's some people who are dealing with like an addiction of sorts to The Office. Like they're finding themselves self-medicating with television.
Mm.
And so that question of is this healthy? Can I be addicted to watching The Office?
We're going to come to this in just a minute. Before we do that, I'm like vomiting on my words today for some reason. It's just like the hyperness of the very good Chris
here next
to me.
Yeah, I know. I'm so glad that's not literal vomiting.
Literal.
A small studio.
But one of the things that I'm hearing a lot of people asking questions about in light of some of the challenges with healthcare, being able to afford healthcare, the controversy over paying for abortion in healthcare, is a lot of people are going, where can I access healthcare in different ways, some of the MediShare programs. And I just wanted to pass this back to you guys. We're going to do a show on this in a couple weeks talking about healthcare. And I would love to hear a little bit about some of the resources you guys are using that are maybe a little more affordable, have great coverage for your family. I know some people are saying, hey, I have this special, you know, autoimmune disease, and I need to be able to access nutritionists and specialists in autoimmune disease that work in naturopathy as well. And so I'm finding that a lot of people are saying that some of the MediShare programs actually does offer better access to this. So if you're maybe in one of those programs and would like to share some information, we're gathering info right now for an upcoming show we're researching for. So just tweet it over to Chris and I, and we'll be sure to share it with each other. In the meantime, looking at this topic of The Office, I have seen a lot of posts over the last couple of years, although I've not seen the show, where people have talked about culture and how at the heart of culture is this idea of rest, and we become obsessed with watching a show thinking that is rest. And in this office recovery show phase, basically, that people go through,
right,
are we really resting in those moments?
You know, it's interesting. I had a brain injury earlier this year, hopefully that's not obvious, but I was in a car accident, and my brain got bounced around my head, and, you know, I had a couple of days where I couldn't remember things I used to remember. It was a little bit scary, you know? But one of the things in recovering, when you have a concussion, is they tell you not to watch TV because you think you're resting, but you're not. Your brain is actually, and so you'll get headaches, and it'll inhibit your recovery. So you're supposed to, like, just go in a dark room and
close your eyes,
stare at the wall. Yeah, it's terrible. It'll drive you nuts.
So dark room, not outside.
Well, you can go outside, but you're just supposed to limit that outside stimulus. So, but TV really was. It was an exercise for the brain, yeah. And so people in general, when you talk to people, everybody's busy or they're tired, right? Because we don't sleep enough, and we're always trying to do too many things. And then when we think we're resting, we're watching TV, and what's happening is our brain is still firing off because it's seeing these things happening. And so to a lesser degree, it thinks that that's happening because we weren't designed for television. And so it runs us down. Why are people getting addicted? And it's not just The Office. There's just this one article that, you know, can you be addicted to The Office? But I think anybody who's listening who has Netflix binged knows the temptation here of self-medicating with television, right? Mm-hmm. I know for me, when I'm stuck in hotel rooms, when I'm speaking, I watched far too much Netflix.
You're like, it's not the pornography. It's The Office.
It's The Office. It's The Office.
God.
Parks and Rec or any of these shows. But a show like The Office in particular, you're going to the office with them. And so you're in a sense, I think you're tricking your mind into thinking you're part of the community there, right? You're hanging out around the water cooler. You're involved in Pam and Jim's relationship, or you're putting up with Michael, the boss, who's kind of an idiot, but a lovable idiot, you know? And so you're in a sense, it's a junk food that makes you feel like you're fulfilling a need for community, but it's not, mm-hmm. right? It's junk food. It's empty calories. It doesn't do what it should do, but it feels like it's doing it.
Right. Well, and those are the shows where I hear people say, well, it takes me to my happy place, or it's relaxing. I know there are shows that I've rewatched and they're just relaxing and peaceful, and it's something good to put on, you know, just for a minute when you're, you know, eating food real quick or whatever it might be. But what's happening is it's a distraction at the heart of everything. A lot of the television, even just this overconsumption of media articles, there's a point where you go, do I really need to know what's going on in the middle of Africa right now? Do I need to know about another person who was killed? And you've got to ask that question, yes or no. And if no, what can I be doing instead that is restful, that is good for me? And I think a really important question is that will grow me.
Right. Yeah. There's very little opportunity for silence in our lives right now, mm-hmm. unless it's a very conscious choice.
Right.
You know, and, I heard the story of a young person the other day who was on retreat and they just couldn't handle it because they had so many YouTube subscriptions. They're so used to keeping up with the YouTubers in their life that they didn't know what to do with themselves when they didn't have access to that. And that's not the state we were created for. You know, it's interesting. You think historically about people, and when the sun went down, the lights went off, right? You had candles, but candles were not, no one had enough candles to have daylight in their house because your house would burn down. And so you typically went to bed earlier, right? You go to bed like 7, right? And you would sleep, and they found that people would sleep and they'd wake up sometime around 2 or 3 and they might do a little stuff like write some letters, and then they'd go back to bed and they'd wake up at sunrise, mm-hmm. you know, but how much rest is there in that lifestyle, right? And now in our lifestyle, we 6 hours, you know, if we're lucky, you get 6 hours, you know, they say you're supposed to eat, sleep 8 or 9, but I don't know anybody who does that. Because there's no space in our life to stop. You know, mm-hmm. we just constantly keep going. We constantly keep going. And then we get in a point where things aren't working. Like, we don't feel good about ourselves, about our lives. We're eating horribly. We're, our relationships are suffering from it. And we find ourselves sitting in front of the television, medicating with television, because we can feel like we're part of somebody else's thing that seems healthier or something.
You know, it's funny you mentioned sleep, because right now things have been so busy. The one thing, the one bit of rest I can guarantee I've been getting is I know I personally have to get 8 to 8.5 hours of sleep. If I don't, or if I go consistently without getting that, like, I'm not at my best. I can't do what I should be doing. And I was thinking about this and how, like, that's sad when I'm going, the only rest I'm getting is I know I get that guaranteed. And that's good that I have that limit where I'm like, I have to make sure I get sleep. But we are not made to work all the time. And that's a reminder that we need to re-implement into our lives. You know, even just like, man, we're about to hit Easter. Or maybe it's Easter for you today. Facebook Live is not an Easter just yet. But, you know, how much are we obsessing over the cooking that we're going to get done? Are we making sure that people, you know, eat and that it's, you know, well presented in a simple way? Or are we over-obsessing with the presentation or how much we made that's not necessarily necessary, you know?
Yeah, totally. You know, are we letting these things become places that are sustaining us, or are we trying to keep up with Pinterest?
Right.
You know, it was interesting. The readings a couple weeks ago, and I can't remember which Sunday it was, but the first reading talked about you won't go back until I have received back the Sabbaths that were stolen from me, you know? And in our culture, where is there any Sabbath?
Right.
You know, where is there any rest? I mean, we've fallen into that where we find ourselves, you know, at the big box store doing all the shopping for the week on a Sunday, and we'll call it a date. But it is not a date, right? You know?
I know, exactly.
And I asked, I was actually at Sam's Club the other day, and I asked the kid, it was crazy. It was crazy on a Sunday. And I was like, is it so crazy today? She goes, no, it's like this every Sunday.
You know, it's funny you say that, because Sunday just seems to be the ideal time to get the laundry done, the cooking done, the grocery shopping. And I'm fighting going, I say that this is the one day that I don't work if I'm not traveling, yet it seems to be the one day that I'm catching up on the basics of life. And, you know, man, like Chris and I are like, as honest as you guys are, like, we need to work on this.
Oh,
being
yeah.
aware, making that effort is so important for each of us. You guys, we are the resurrection people. We are children of God. And even just taking a moment, like, do we actually stop and pray our Bibles and read them?
Yeah.
Do we stop and just look at a wall and look at the leaves? Someone told me the other day, you need to go and sit and count the leaves on that tree outside.
I'm not going to go count leaves. I can say that right now. You know, I think the thing to remember is that if the devil can't kill you with bad things, he'll kill you with good things.
That's Chris Mueller. This is Tim Ray Millington. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Trending. Find us on YouTube, Facebook, and on iTunes.